You're listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. You can find out more about the resource and construction industry, including how to communicate consciously with your stakeholders at resourceindustrymedia.com.au.
Welcome to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media and Connecting Industry. I'm Kieran Moran. The Connecting Industry Podcast series is designed to tell the stories of the people who work in the resource and construction sector throughout Australia. It's our goal for these podcasts to not only keep you up to date with the latest resource and construction news, information and procurement opportunities, but most importantly, build relationships between you and our guests so you can connect with their stories and get a better understanding of how to communicate and tell your business story right. On this week's Connecting News podcast, we have James Moon, the Chief Executive Officer of Vertical Horizons Australia, who provide tailored safety training to various industries. With a solid background in operational management, business development and leadership, James started his work in life within the New Zealand Defence Force, with his experience spanning the construction industry, industrial health and safety and public service. Welcome to the program, James.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to having a discussion with you.
So before we get into Vertical Horizons Australia and your position there and everything that you do within that business, I'm hoping the discussion is interesting because from what I see from your background, of course, we're stalking you on LinkedIn and everything like that. You started off your career with the New Zealand Defence Force. How did that come about?
Well, actually, I started my working career as a plumber, drain layer and gas fitter.
Oh, my God, I'm an ex-plumber as well.
Yeah. Yes. I don't put that onto my professional CV. I started off in Wellington. It was a very different era in how you learnt your trade and so forth. It was very much on-the-job training with a employer and then block school every year, I believe it was, and I think I went to night school every Tuesday night. And to be fair, the training wasn't that much different to how you learned at school. Very rote, very authoritarian, and it wasn't something that I relate too well to learn. However, I got through it and I learned a lot of things during that time and progressing out of school and learning how to operate within our grown-up environment. But it was never really enough for me. I could see my future sort of still digging holes in Lower Hutt in the middle of winter, having to wear a wetsuit to unblock a drain. And I thought, no, I can do better than that. And that's where I did. I went off and joined the military. And I spent 28 years in the military in the New Zealand Infantry Regiment, and progressed to very senior levels within there as well. And that experience taught me a lot about where I am today and, you know, how I deal with people. A lot of people have the expectation that the military, it's like, do as I say and bark out orders and so forth. And certainly when I joined, that's how it was. But, you know, defence forces evolve. They have to. They have to be a product of what society is providing to them. And people just don't relate to that sort of authoritarian leadership anymore. So I was very lucky.
That's exactly what I was actually going to say. So, and yes, I suspect being within the Defence Force as well, you know, it guided you very much into a very organised man and with the position you're in now and so forth as well in being able to direct people. But you just said authoritarian again, and you did say it earlier in relation to the plumbing and the schooling and so forth, and it was a little bit authoritarian. And then you went to the Defence Force, which, as you just said, it was the same at that time as well.
Yeah, it was, but it was offering a little bit more than crawling under someone's house in Wellington. It offered overseas travel. It offered the prospect of, you know, progressing in different areas within the military. You didn't just have to stay in the chosen corps for a while. You could progress off into different roles and so forth. And I suppose from the military's perspective, once you started to get some rank, you literally changed your role every 2 years, 2 to 3 years. So, you know, you had a new role And that's why I have short-term contracts down on my CV, because effectively that's what they were. Although you worked for the same large organisation, you were doing something different, and it was quite exciting. But one thing that it did do is it taught me the value of training, and training in very, very high-risk environments. If you can imagine war-type situations that you're training for, you're using live ammunition, you're doing a lot of repetitive work, and it instilled the processes and the reasoning why you have good training and you have good trainers who can relate to the trainees and bring them up to the standards that they need. And that was a transition the New Zealand Defence Force went through, and I would expect all defence forces around the world have gone through in the period that I served, simply because the people who were coming into the organisation weren't used to an autocratic way of learning, and you had to evolve and adapt. And that led on to, I suppose, to where I am today as well, in a training organisation.
Yeah, definitely it would have. And mainly I've dealt with a few people in the resource construction sector over the last few years who've been at the Defence Force, and, yeah, very organised, very, you know, I wouldn't say regimented, but they definitely know exactly what they're doing and in great positions and getting paid well for that. Now, 28 years you spent in the Defence Force. Now, before we get to Vertical Horizons Australia, and you worked up your way in that position as well, what I'm interested in here is, so 28 years, 2014, you went as a senior project manager with Hawkins, and as you have listed on your LinkedIn here, you worked within the Canterbury Recovery Project when you had the earthquake over there in New Zealand.
Yeah, that was my stepping out from a very enclosed environment in a public sector out to the private sector. And the private sector had changed quite dramatically since I'd last operated in as a plumber, drain layer, gas fitter. And one of the biggest changes that I noticed was health and safety, and that how much that had grown. And certainly the younger people, it was not something new that they were pushing back against, but the older people that are of my generation, you know, they were pushing back against the health and safety regulations and the rules, and they just hadn't evolved. That was one of the eye-opening things for me. But the other one was, we worked for a corporate employer, and they were tough, and it was a different environment. It wasn't collaborative. So, you know, I was drinking from the fire hose very quickly and trying to learn how the private sector worked. The great thing about it is I had this fantastic team who I was looking after. So I had, I think off the top of my head now, 10 project managers and 8 quantity surveyors. And we had 350 houses to repair.
And this is now, the Canterbury Earthquake Recovery Program.
Yeah, so we were one part of it.
Yep.
Hawkins was one part of it, and there was other providers as well. And our team, 350 houses, which had an average repair value of around about $300,000. They did, you know, they were all houses that were over $100,000 required for repair. And it was coming to near the end of the project that the corporate employer wanted to be involved in. Veiled speech for the insurance company. Basically, the reinsurer's money had run out and it was coming into their money. So they were getting a lot tighter about how they were going to pay things out. And they went very much to, we're going to cash everybody out as opposed to repair near the end, which put a lot of pressure on and trying to operate between that employer, manage building businesses who had contracts, who obviously were wanting further cash flow coming in, as opposed to the insurance company paying out the client. So it was managing the client, the builders responding through into the corporate client, but then at the same time maintaining a level of employment for the 18 to 20 people that I had working for me. And I was only one team of three within that Hawkins office doing the repairs. So we had, it became quite transient with the staff that were coming in. So a lot of interviewing staff on a daily basis to ensure that we could provide the service that we'd been engaged to provide by the insurance company.
Did you deal with the people, like these people who own the houses much? How did it, you know, did you have any involvement with those people? Because, of course, they're going through the insurance. Daily. They might have been watching you.
No, daily contact with the homeowners.
And what was that like? How was, I'm just interested to hear about, you know, a lot of trauma would have been suffered at that time for a lot of people and a lot of heartache and everything else. But what was it like, and for yourself in a way, you know, being able to do this and it's contributing quite strongly to the community and getting this up and getting the, you know, the people's lives back up and running. But what was all that like?
There were different levels of homeowners, and that some were very acceptant of what the repair was going to be for them, what the process was, how long it was going to take. You know, some have been waiting 4 years at that point to start a repair anyway. And they were great. They were just so thankful that when the works were underway and when you handed that property back over to them, they were just over the moon. And for some of them, you know, they got literally brand new houses out of it. They weren't sort of renovations, they were more restorations. In some areas as well. And it's understandable. There were ones who would find fault with everything you're trying to do for them because they had waited so long and they hit that wall where they just were so sick of trying to bash through that wall to get answers out of either their insurance business or the builder who was repairing their home for them, because, you know, they didn't all go smoothly. And A lot of times it was managing expectations, it was managing relationships and trying to keep them positive and work out, you know, small steps to keep the project moving forward.
So after working with the Hawkins Group on the Canterbury Recovery Project for the earthquake that did happen in, it was around about 2014, wasn't it? 2014 in New Zealand.
Yeah, the earthquake was 2011.
Oh, geez, time flies, yeah. Doesn't it? Okay, then, so a lot of things do come out of that, and as you said, it's discussed, and a lot of things probably changed in New Zealand in the way that they did do things and, you know, a lot of perspectives for the people across the board who were involved. But you then got involved with a company called Merit Builders New Zealand, which was born out of the earthquake in the construction company.
Yeah, it was. That was interesting. They were a builder working for a different project provider, and Justin was looking for a general manager, and that's where I fell into that. But Merit Builders, my understanding was, because Justin has a building business here on the Sunshine Coast called Merit Builders as well, very successful business. And his family's homes were, you know, destroyed and broken during the earthquake. So he went home being a builder to help them fix it up and saw an opportunity to grow a business there as well. So he started the business up. It was at the point where the programs were starting to come to an end. Justin wanted to come back into Australia, so he engaged me to look after his business in New Zealand. And unfortunately for the business, it wasn't known by anybody. The all the work it had been doing was through the earthquake insurance repairs, which were basically jobs given to them. So that was a real challenge in developing a brand, promoting that brand out into the Christchurch area. But in the first instance, identifying what, you know, what it was that Merit Builders was going to do. I noticed a lot of builders try to be catch-all. You know, they do architectural renovations, commercial, new builds and everything. And they're not really anybody to anybody in that instance when you're trying to get yourself established in the scene. So we did a lot of work in around providing some values, some strategic guidance, and most importantly, networking and getting out there and developing that business and getting it up off the ground. Got to a point where it really needed the owner manager to be in there working in the business and running the business. It couldn't afford to have someone like myself sitting there taking a wage and therefore not having enough cash flow coming through to support everything. So I restructured it slightly, which basically says I made myself redundant for the betterment of that business. I'm not sure. I think Justin's still got it going, but it's at a very low level. back in New Zealand. And I moved out of there and basically started looking for another job.
What I'm interested there is a little bit. So we talked to a number of people and, you know, a number of them are leaders in their field. But also, you know, we talk about what motivates people to get up and so forth. And I suspect you've had a lot of your, you know, mental training, especially through the working with the Defence Force and so forth, which shows through on a lot of people that we do discuss this with on the podcast. And now, as you just said there, within Merit Builders, you know, the owner wasn't there at the time. And it all does a lot of the time come down to leadership. And if the leaders aren't there, it can be a little bit of an issue. And it's sort of where we also talk about businesses. It's about businesses taking control, knowing every aspect of their business and being able to take control, lead properly, and also work with the people that they're working with. And, you know, a lot of people hire people better than them, but lead them in the right direction and watch their business grow. At the moment, of course, you're the director of Vertical Horizons Australia and so forth. And so that's a great leadership role. You worked up as first starting off in New Zealand as a regional manager on the West Coast, so Canterbury, which we were talking about earlier. But how much does, I just want to come back to the leadership, how much does leadership sort of come into a role that you are doing now or even on the build-up to that role and being able to work and guide people to, you know, generally be the best that they can?
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, leadership is, you know, touted around a lot in academia and a lot in business development and so forth like that. Leadership's a doing word from my perspective. It's the actions that you do which people inspire to be like. The certainly one thing in the military, if you were not seen to be able to step out in front and do what you're asking other people to do, then you had a problem with that ability to lead. Sure, you had rank and vested authority, but that didn't really mean you're a leader. It just meant people did what you told them to do because there was consequences if they didn't. Well, in business, the consequences aren't quite as extreme. You know, if you're telling someone to do something and they really don't want to do it, they're just not going to do it. So leadership is about, from my perspective, is about showing a better place for someone and how they can get to that better place. It's somewhere that they want to be, whether it's personally or it's as part of the business. And what we try to encourage within Vertical Horizons is a clan culture. And a clan culture is very much more in and around personal relationships. It's about collaboration and teamwork and about encouraging others to support each other in that work. You know, it's operating as a bit cliche, teams without having teams. So to do that as a senior leader, you have to set the environment for them to be better. So it's about having positive environments as well and giving them enough boundaries that they can make decisions, and if the decision they make is wrong, it's not about lambasting them. It's about understanding what those consequences were and how that can be fixed in the next time. It's funny. I had a group of soldiers just come into start their infantry training. I think there's about 120 of them. And I was giving them a brief about the training they're about to undergo, 12-week intense training package. And within the group was an anthropologist, and she was doing a study on the Defence Force, and she'd gone through their basic training with them. She was going to go through this with them. And I related to them, it's like a dog on a lead in the backyard. It's going to run around, it's going to get tangled up in and around the lemon tree and the clothesline. And there's no use yelling at the dog. All you need to do is untangle that dog, and eventually it will learn not to get tangled up. And it's kind of the same analogy. It's probably not the greatest one, but it's allowing people to get tangled up and then showing them how to get untangled, how not to get tangled up again, and they will learn and they become better at what they're doing. But at the same time, it's providing goals. So, you know, here's the railway tracks. Here's your left and right of arc. Bounce around in between those, no problems at all, because this is where we want to get to. I don't want to be prescriptive of how you get there, but this is where we want to be. And people will surprise you. They come up with absolutely ingenious and innovative ways of doing things, which might not be the norm, but as long as they fit within your values, your processes and systems, then you're going to be okay. And it allows them to develop as well. And therefore, they don't see you as this boss who is sitting above them. They see you as an equal. The next part to that, for me, is I would spend 60, 70% of my time talking with the staff about what's working well for them, what's not working well for them, understanding them, mentoring them, coaching them, and which is another part of a clan environment.
Okay then, well look, we're getting right into the podcast in respect to timing and so forth, and I think you've actually provided a very good lead into Vertical Horizons Australia, and you know, 2019, you're a regional manager in New Zealand, now you're the director living in Australia, in Brisbane and so forth. Vertical Horizons Australia, so you provide specialist training for many industries, from mining, oil and gas, and the construction and civil. So tell us a little bit about the company.
Okay, so Vertical Horizons Australia has been around for just a bit over 20 years. It's been incorporated for, I think our anniversary is next year, 20-year anniversary is next year. And it's part of the Vertical Horizons Group. The Vertical Horizons Group has Vertical Horizons Australia, Vertical Horizons New Zealand, and Vertical Horizons International, which I look after the international side as well. Always been within the civil construction side since it was incorporated. I came in 2019 and we were across, as you've identified, civil construction, mining and transportation. We were trying again to be sort of everything to everybody without being the specialists which we espouse that we are. And we had a couple of areas where we weren't specialists in that area, and so I pulled us out of those areas. And we looked at some niche areas within the four main pillars of where we were working. And within that, we found a couple of niche areas within civil construction. And I would say instead of mining, I'd say the energy sector. And the energy sector is really interesting for us because it leads us into some of our core elements, which is that working at heights, working in confined spaces. And that's a core element across the whole of the Vertical Horizons Group. Vertical Horizons Group is the longest serving GWO accredited provider in Australasia. So one of the areas that I've taken the business is into the wind turbine environment within Australia. We haven't been operating in there previously. We've dominated the New Zealand market and we've done some training up in Vietnam just recently. But the Australian market, we haven't really tapped into. So that's one of our key focuses going forward. Within the civil construction, we looked at a niche environment in there that we believe is a growing environment, and that's in and around trenchless technology. Now, you know, that's nothing new. It's been around for a long, long time, but it's not well served by training providers, mainly probably because it's very hard to find good quality trainers. We're very lucky in a trainer that we have has got years and years of experience within there. But the interesting one that came off that was the little bolt-ons that came to it, which was hydrovacking, hydroexcavation. And that in itself had a couple of bolt-ons, which was water jetting. And it's an area that we've found ourselves in. And we found very quickly that some of our trainers were experts in that area as well. And so it's another area that we're pushing hard on. We've just delivered to Rocky Regional Council, who have instructed all their contractors to do the training and recommended us to deliver that. So we've literally just trained half of Rockhampton out in drain cleaning. But it's allowed us to be enter into membership with, you know, key specific associations who have a national and some of them a global reach, which increases our brand, increases our knowledge of industries that, you know, are really extremely highly dangerous and allow us to compete in on a fee for service and in some cases, some funded training areas as well.
Yeah, it's diversification. And as you've shown, as you've moved into that, and that's something we've discussed quite a bit for businesses, especially like with COVID and diversifying the business and the changes that do come forward. And you seem to be moving into, you know, what you said, within the energy sector. And one of that is renewables within the wind and so forth. And also, as you said there, it was very interesting in relation to the water jetting and hydro evacuation. I know exactly what you are talking about there. And moving into that area is quite interesting. We're at the very end of this podcast, however, James. And I just wanted to say, so there's a lot of businesses out there. Of course, training has improved massively over the years, especially within the civil construction area and a number of areas now. It's extremely important. One sentence or one line, what could you give to a lot of the businesses out there who are looking for good training and why they should be doing that?
Real training that saves lives. Scenario-based training. We're on-site, or we can deliver at our training centre, and agile, responsive customer service.
Okay, spot on basically. And then it's all about keeping people safe in the workforce. If you do want to get onto Vertical Horizons, go onto the website. So just verticalhorizons.com.au and get onto them. Check out some of their training programs. I have quite a few there. As James said, confined space, high-risk work license, and of course heights, but drilling operations, plant operations, trenches technology, which is great, which you've just delivered to Rockhampton, work health and safety, of course, and first aid, and a number of others as well. But thank you very much, James, for joining us today on the Connecting Industry podcast.
Thanks for having us, Kieran. It's great to reflect on where I've come from to where I am and to where we're going to take Vertical Horizons Australia and the international market as well.
Yeah, and I'm sure I'm going to watch it. Thanks very much, James.
Excellent. Thanks, Kieran.
You've been listening to the Connecting Industry podcast interview series with Kieran Moran from Resource Industry Media. To find out more about the resource and construction industry, including past podcasts, news and events, go to resourceindustrymedia.com.au.